The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the November-December issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to go right to Who's Who in Sports, page 8, line 2. Caleb Williams, Chicago Bears quarterback. His height, 6'1". His weight is 215 pounds. He was born November 18, 2001, hometown, Washington, D.C. Following a season in which he threw for 3,333 yards with 30 TDs and just 5 interceptions, Williams was taken by the Bears with the top pick in the 2024 NFL Draft. He won the Heisman Trophy the previous season when he led the nation with 42 passing TDs as the Trojans went 11-3. Williams played one season at Oklahoma before transferring to USC. Did you know? Williams was the 8th player from USC to win the Heisman Trophy, the most of any school. Mallory Swanson, USWNT forward. Her height is 5'4". She was born April 29, 1998, hometown, Highlands Ranch, Colorado. In her 100th appearance with the United States Women's National Team, Swanson scored the only goal in the 2024 Olympics gold medal match against Brazil. She also scored 3 goals earlier in the tournament. Swanson, who plays her club soccer for the Chicago Red Stars, was a member of the 2019 World Cup champs. Did you know, though? Swanson was known as Mallory Puge before she married Dansby Swanson, who plays shortstop for the Chicago Cubs. Lee Kiefer, USA fencing foil. Her height is 5'4". She was born June 15, 1994, hometown, Lexington, Kentucky. With 2 gold medals at the 2024 Olympics and another at the 20 Games, Kiefer is the most decorated fencer in United States history. In Paris, she defended her title in the individual fall and added a gold in the women's team foil. Kiefer is currently in medical school at the University of Kentucky. Did you know? 3 swords are used in fencing. The foil, a flexible rectangular blade, the epee, V-shaped, and the saber, a stiffer blade designed for slashing. Page 20. What if you suddenly became a coach trying to win the first 2 Super Bowls? You're at the Pro Bowl Hall of Fame taking in an exhibit about the origin of the Super Bowl. You discover that it began as a showdown between an NFL champion and the best team, the American Football League, which would emerge with the NFL merge after Super Bowl IV. You learn that the trophy given to the winner is named for Vince Lombardi, who coached the Green Bay Packers to wins in the first 2 big games. Then something odd happens. You see a glowing light behind a door, so you open it. You walk through and are blinded by the glare. When the light dims, you can finally make out where you are. The Bears Packers locker room just before the kickoff of Super Bowl I. And you're in charge. Decision number 1. As your team takes the field for the pregame warm-ups, you look around to see you're in the Los Angeles Coliseum about to take on the AFL champion Kansas City Chiefs. Strangely enough, despite the fact that you are just a kid who only moments earlier walked into a broom closet in Canton, Ohio, you seem to have complete knowledge of the team and its players. I can do this, you tell yourself. Then the game starts. Almost immediately, starting receiver Boyd Dowler goes down with a separated shoulder. There are 2 players who could take his place. One is Max McGee, who caught only 4 passes all year. You've heard he might have broken curfew last night, and right now he doesn't seem to know where his helmet is. Your other option is Bob Long, who played in just 5 games after having knee surgery. Doctors were amazed he was able to come back so quickly, but he only had 3 receptions during the season. Your quarterback, Bart Starr, asked who he should look to throw to. What do you tell him? A, look for Bob Long. B, rely on Max McGee. A, if you pick Long, while he makes an admirable effort, Long just can't provide the spark that the Packers need. Without a passing attack, your ground game never gets rolling. By hanging in the scoreless game early, the Chiefs, who came into the game as a 14-point underdogs, gained confidence. Coach Hank Stram, a defensive mastermind, calls a brilliant game. Kansas City QB Len Dawson leads his team on a long touchdown drive in the second quarter, and the Chiefs don't look back in a 35-10 win. The result ends shockwaves to the sport. It's one of the greatest upsets fans has ever seen. You trudge back to the locker room. On the way, you see a familiar door. You walk through it and find yourself back in the Hall of Fame, standing in front of an exhibit detailing the origin of the hardware given to the Super Bowl champion every year, the Hank Stram Trophy. If you pick McGee, you immediately begin to regret your choice when it becomes apparent that McGee does not, in fact, have his helmet. He's groggy because he didn't get back to the team hotel until 6:30 in the morning. McGee has to borrow a helmet from a teammate, but it's a giant model with a full-cage, full face mask. On his first snap, Starr throws to him, but they don't connect. But on Green Bay's second drive, the 34-year-old McGee slips past cornerback Willie Mitchell and hauls in a Starr pass with one hand. He tucks the ball away and runs in for a 37-yard touchdown, the first points in Super Bowl history. In the third quarter, McGee scores again, capping a drive in which he has 3 catches with a 13-yard TD reception. He finishes the game with 7 catches, 3 more than he had in the regular season, and 138 yards. He misses out on the Corvette given to the game's MVP, Starr. But his performance guarantees that your team's dynasty is still on track. Go to decision 2. Not only did your Packers win the first Super Bowl against the Chiefs, but they also were the NFL champions the year before. That means another title in 1967 will make Green Bay the NFL's first three-peat champion. But it won't be easy. The Dallas Cowboys are an emerging threat. The Pack barely beat them in an NFL title game the previous season, and they've just destroyed the Cleveland Browns to advance to the 1967 championship game. Your squad also won, which means the rematch will take place in Green Bay on December 31st, a day when the temperature at kickoff is minus 13 degrees, with the wind making it feel even colder. You bundle up and lead your team on to Lambeau Field. The turf is frozen solid, and you find yourself feeling like you're on ice skates. You rely on Starr's arm early, since Dallas's doomsday defense has been virtually impossible to run against all season. You're leading 14-10 when the Cowboys run a trick play, scoring on a halfback pass to take a 17-14 lead early in the fourth quarter. With the clock winding down, Starr drives your team down to the Dallas 1-yard line. You call 2 running plays, but your back, Donnie Anderson, keeps losing his footing. It's now 3rd down with 16 seconds left, and you have used your last timeout. Starr wants to run the ball in himself, or you can try to catch Dallas off guard with a pass. If it's incomplete, you'll have time for 1 more play. What do you call? C, let Starr run the QB sneak, or D, attempt a pass for a score. D, if you pass, The broadcast booth color commentator Pat Summerall says he believes you'll throw the ball. So maybe your notion that a pass would be a surprise is wrong. Indeed, the Cowboys seem to be expecting a pass as well. Starr rolls out and flips the ball towards tight end Mar Fleming. But Dallas safety Mike Gaker jumps in and intercepts it, clinching the Cowboys' win. The Packers are famously publicly owned, which means that the fans practically run the show. They decide the team can't afford another game in such brutal conditions and decide to build a dome stadium. Unfortunately, cost overruns means that they have to sell a majority stake of the team to outside investors from the Pacific Northwest to raise money. Ultimately, the Packer Dome gets built, but it becomes incredibly expensive to operate. The team falls on hard times before undergoing a revival 3 decades later when Brett Favre leads the Portland Packers to victory in Super Bowl 31. Your adventure is over. C, if you run the ball. When you talk to Starr on the sideline, he tells you that handing the ball off to a running back will be futile. The back has to get a running start, he says, which is impossible on the ice. Starr argues that since he's standing under center, he can just take the snap and lunge forward. You tell him to go ahead and call a running play. He picks Brown right, 31 wedge. Normally that play requires him to hand the ball off, but he simply doesn't tell his linesman that he'll be running it himself. It works as he dives in over his lineman for a touchdown. After the game, a local newspaper dubs the game as Igloo Bowl. It eventually becomes known as the Ice Bowl. With your win in the iconic game, the Packers clinch a spot in the second Super Bowl against the Oakland Raiders of the AFL. Can you make it for two? Go to decision three. Decision number three. The Raiders proved to be a formidable opponent in Super Bowl II. You're 13-0 in the second quarter on a windy day in Miami. But Oakland strikes back with a touchdown to seize the momentum. Then the Raider defense stiffens, and now you're facing 4th-and-2 at your own 10-yard line just before halftime. Your punter, the left-footed Donnie Anderson, has one of the worst averages in the league. A kick almost certainly will give Oakland good enough field position to try a field goal, if not drive for a touchdown before halftime. Or you could try a fake punt. Sure, it's dangerous, but Anderson is also a halfback. He's one of your better runners, and if he can pick up 2 yards in the first down, you'll be able to go into half with a 13-7 lead, and more importantly, momentum on your side. What's your call? E, go for it, or F, punt? E, if you go for it. As Anderson runs onto the field to punt, you tell him you're calling a fake. He seems surprised, very surprised. The play called for him to take the snap, take a step forward as if he's going to kick, and then take off running. However, Anderson is so flummoxed that he bobbles the snap. By the time he picks the ball up, he's smothered by the Raiders. They take over at your 10-yard line and score on a touchdown pass on the next play. Oakland takes a 14-13 lead into the half and rides that wave to a 33-13 upset. The next year, another AFL team, the Jets, wins the Super Bowl. The AFL's Chiefs then win Super Bowl IV, meaning that when it comes time for a merger, the NFL has lost 3 straight Super Bowls. The clubs in this upstart league add a few demands to the deal, and given the recent results, the NFL has to agree. They want to pick the commissioner of the new league. They select Raiders owner Al Davis, a brash maverick who will lead the organization to unprecedented heights. And their second demand is that the name of this new league, which will become the most popular in the world, will be the AFL, and the NFL will cease to exist. Your adventure is over. What if, well, F, if you punt? Anderson averaged just 36.6 yards per punt during the season, but he's one of the best at hitting the ball high in the air. He launches a kick toward Oakland's return man, Roger Bird. Between the wind and the fact that he's not used to handling punts from left-footed kickers, Bird struggles to field the ball. He fumbles and the Packers recover. There's enough time left on the clock for Starr to lead Green Bay to a field goal and a 16-7 halftime lead. That takes the wind out of the Raiders' sails. Your Packers dominate the second half, and you win comfortably 33-14. You've done it. You've won the first two Super Bowls. On the field, a couple of your linemen start to pick you up onto their shoulders. You envision not only your name on the Super Bowl trophy, but also your face in an iconic photo of a champion coach being carried off the field. Then they drop you. As you fall towards the ground, you bang your head on a shoulder pad. The next thing you know, you're in what appears to be a broom closet. You look around and see an overturned mop bucket, which must be the thing you tripped over just before you banged your head on the ground. You open the closet door and walk out to find your parents looking concerned. They ask where you've been. You start to tell them, but instead you just say, "You'll never believe it." And then you'll walk back to the Super Bowl exhibit. Congratulations. Storm warning, page 34. 2024 basketball preview. Oklahoma City has a combination of young talent and future draft picks that will have the rest of the NBA feeling thunderstruck. There was a moment. In June, shortly after the draft, when Thunder general manager Sam Presti sat down to address the media. Before he discussed his team's picks, he thanked his scouts, the people whose legwork and time spent traveling helped Presti decide who to select. The elevators and the scouts, the evaluators and the scouts spend so much time away, travel all over the world, he said. There's a lot of rental car returns at 5 a.m, connecting flights to far-off lands. There's a million stories like that. Well, they had better get used to it because they're going to be remarkably busy for the next several years. Oklahoma City has amassed a staggering bounty of draft picks, as many as 27, including 12 first-rounders in the next 5 years. I looked up highlights on YouTube of them playing defense, said Caruso. I'm excited to add that. Arms race, the 22-year-old Holmgren 7'6" wingspan makes him dangerous anywhere on the floor. Who's got next? The Thunder are set up to contend for a long, long time. Here's how all 30 teams look this year, as well as 5 years down the road. That kind of draft capital is the envy of every general manager who is trying to rebuild an NBA team. But here's the catch. The Thunder aren't rebuilding. In fact, they might just be the best team in the league. Presti has constructed a roster that is remarkably balanced. The offense, built around MVP runner-up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, was third in the NBA in efficiency last year. The defense, anchored by 7'1" rim protector Chet Holmgren and forward Jalen Williams, ranked fourth. And the Thunder did all that with only one rotation player over the age of 25. Presti made the team even tougher and more experienced in the offseason, acquiring all defensive guard Alex Caruso. I looked up highlights on YouTube of them playing defense, Caruso said when he was traded. I was really excited. I'm excited to add to that. From the ground up, Oklahoma City is, by NBA standards, a small city. Unlike New York or Los Angeles, it's not a glitzy destination for free agents. So the Thunder have historically built through the draft, and Presti is very good at that. From 2007 to 2009, he selected three future Hall of Famers: Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. Most recently, he snagged Holmgren, second overall in 2022, then got Williams later in that draft. The current group is eerily similar to Durant's Thunder. They're young and tight-knit. Holmgren and Alexander are especially close, which was evident in their TV commercial in which they sang a parody of Christina Aguilera's song. Durant and his crew would go eat wings together and then play video games until bedtime. "Every day I wake up, I feel blessed to be here," Durant said in 2010. But Presti ultimately couldn't keep the team together. They made the finals in 2012, but lost to the Heat in five games. Now, though, Presti not only has a young core, but also has the tools to find complementary pieces. On the draft night back in June, he packaged five second-round picks and sent them to the Knicks for the rights to Dylan Jones, a player who might have been available much later. And it's not like the Thunder need much. Holmgren, who missed the entire 2022-23 season with a foot injury, is a basketball unicorn, a quadruple-double waiting to happen. He can shoot from anywhere. He made 37% of his threes last year, has the passing touch of a guard, and is long enough to grab any rebound or block any shot. Add in the two-way talents of Alexander and Williams, and you've got a team that won 57 games last year, 2 years after winning just 24. Their inexperience showed in the playoffs when Dallas knocked OKC out in the second round. So the scouts will continue to return rental cars at the crack of dawn as they travel the world looking for a player or two to push the team over the hump. And unlike with most contending teams, there's not a sense of urgency, the feeling that a title window is closing. The Thunder is rolling in Oklahoma City, and it's going to be loud for a long time. NCAA. Only UConn has swept the NCAA basketball championships in the same year. And the Huskies are again one of a handful of programs prepared to contend in both the men's and women's tournaments. UConn, the one and only double-dipping school. In 1985, Gino Auriemma was hired as the women's basketball coach at Connecticut, which is located in the small town of Storrs. Neither the women's nor the men's programs were especially strong. "We're not in a recruiting area where a lot of players are growing up," Auriemma says. "We are not in a major city. We didn't have a great arena on campus. I can't think of any positive that there would have been 40 years ago to come to school here when I got the job." So what we found out during those first three or four recruiting classes was we had to get kids that didn't care about any of that. How we recruit hasn't changed one iota. This is a place where you come to work. That philosophy of working is working. UConn has won 11 women's titles, and the ethos has rubbed off on the men's program as well. "There was a very much a parallel progression," says Auriemma. "Under three coaches, the Huskies have won six championships, and twice in 2004 and 2014. UConn claimed both titles. A third double dip isn't out of the question. Auriemma's team went 33-6 last season and will feature the best returning player in the country, Paige Beckers, as well as the top recruit, Sarah Strong. The men, coached by Dan Hurley, have won the last two national championships. Even though they lost lottery picks Stephon Castle and Donovan Klingon, the Huskies are always going to tough to beat under Hurley, who has impressed his UConn counterpart. He's done an unbelievable job of taking high-level talent and mixing it with some older guys," raves Auriemma. "But he coaches them like they're in junior high. He teaches them like this is how you dribble a basketball. Basic, yes, but it's working." Iowa State. If only the NCAA had a co-ed competition, Iowa State can do it all. Play tenacious defense, score in bunches. The problem? The men do the former. The women do the latter. Led by Senator Audie Crooks, the Cyclone women won 21-12 despite having the worst defense in the Big 12. The men, meanwhile, had one of the top defenses in the country, epitomized by pesky point guard Keyshawn Gilbert. The trick now is to combine the two teams' strengths. The appeal of playing with Crooks lured a pair of sharpshooting transfers to Iowa State. While that doesn't help the defense, it means the Cyclones can't rely on outgunning opponents. The arrival of 6'11" Deshaun Jackson from Charlotte will make the men even more formidable on D and possibly add another facet to the offense. They need only look to the women's program to see what a center can do for an attack. Can the Cyclones put it all together? Baylor. What's the call? Page 52. Junk throw. Julianne is competing in a track meet. She heaves the javelin well past the leader's distance. But when it lands, the nose doesn't stick in the ground. Does her throw count? Do 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 do. Her throw is measured at the point where the nose hit the ground. So long as the tip of the javelin hits first, it does not have to stick into the ground. Trivia challenge. The Celtics defeated the Mavericks in the NBA Finals earlier this year for their 18th title, breaking Boston's tie with the Lakers for the most championships in league history. Which franchise is third on that list? Do 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 do. The Warriors with 7-2 in Philadelphia and 5 as Golden State. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.